This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite lore cast on the Citadel.
Welcome to the Mass Effect lore cast. I'm In7 the Legend.
And I'm Genesis. Join us
as we explore along tides of light
and through shoals of dust
to see where this lore began
and consider where it may go.
Spectres, hello, and welcome to the final lore episode of the Mass Effect Lorecast of 2025. I am your host, In7 the Legend, and joining me, as always, is Genesis. Genesis, are you feeling festive? Have you decked the halls?
We have two Christmas trees up at my mom's house, and we plan on putting up the ornaments this weekend, so we're getting there, yeah.
Yeah. All right. I'm feeling somewhat festive as well. We need to go get some eggnog and perhaps some mulled wine. And
I have eggnog.
I don't like alcoholic eggnog. That sounds gross to me. If I'm trying to get a buzz, I'm not trying to do it with 8,000 calories.
Yeah. No, mine's a non-alcoholic eggnog, but it's also like got additional pumpkin spice in it. So It's pretty good.
Okay. So you could heat it up, make a pumpkin spice eggnog latte at home.
Ooh, that sounds delicious.
I'm gonna vomit thinking about it. Anyway, no, we're not doing the lore of pumpkin spice or eggnog today. We are talking about a pretty little known movie related story in the Mass Effect universe. And when we stumbled upon this arc on Cerberus Daily News Network, we thought, okay, the movie aspect, it's literally about cinema and film. The movie aspect is kind of perfect for the holiday season because so many different blockbusters come out during this time of year because that's when people go to the movies the most, I guess. But Genesis, you want to talk about how you felt when you first found this as well?
So I was really confused. It looked like a really basic one-shot article, talking about like the Super Bowl and everything like that. And then I just continued reading through and then I was like, this storyline continues on for a total of 10 articles. We had less than that on some of the other topics that we have covered. And so I was really interested on why and how this storyline gets to continue on for so long. And then I read through it and I'm like, okay, we definitely have to talk about this one.
Yes.
And it's so fitting that it's today on the day that we're recording being December 18th.
Yes, that is fitting because the third Avatar movie is coming out tomorrow, right? And the first Avatar movie came out, 16, I was like doing the math, 16 years ago today, right?
Mm-hmm.
So 2009.
Yep.
Keep that in mind. 2009 is when this came out. And the first dispatch that we get in this Cerberus Daily News arc is the following February. So 3 months later. And so this starts as kind of a curveball. However, it's also going to be timely because Super Bowl playoffs and Super Bowl is coming up. Well, here we have canonized that American football is still being played, by the way, in 2185. And the New York Giants are apparently still a team. However, they're still winning. They beat the Beijing Dragons 24-19 in Super Bowl. Did you say this one's 219, right?
Mm-hmm.
219. Yep. And it says, quote, Earth nations gathered around their vid sets today for Super Bowl 219. I'll get that right. An annual sporting and media event that culminates the North American Union rules football season. Okay, so it's not just NFL now. It's North American Union rules football season. The New York Giants defied expectations and took down the Beijing Dragons in a tight 24-19 game. The highlight was a 69-yard pass, nice, from Krogan quarterback Bragas Thule. The game's top three hit commercials were Aldrin Labs' hilarious Improvise, Unithirst's Coffee Cola Rock and Rolla, and Binary Helix's Not My Future, Thanks. As for the greatest tease, it goes to the trailer for the soon-to-be summer blockbuster Nakia Corridor, which sent sports fans to the extranet trying to find out what the hell a Nakia was. Doesn't say hell, it says heck, but that's my own flavor. Okay, so a few things here. Let's go back a second. Krogan quarterback?
Right? The Krogan quarterback playing in the North American Union rules football. I want to see this game so much. Like, first of all, a 69-yard pass.
Nice.
That's really good for starters. Yeah, nice.
It's really good. Unheard of. Like, I'm imagining that not only is it like, okay, so it's not like a 69-yard pass where the ball was only in the air for 20 yards and then there was like 49 yards after reception. I'm imagining because it was a Krogan quarterback, he literally heaved that ball 69 yards in the air and then it was caught.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And so it would be so interesting to watch this. And the Beijing Dragons. Okay. So now we know that, you know, it's everybody, it's universal or it's worldwide playing in the football. I want to know if the rules have been updated. I want to know if the field is bigger now that we're now that we have enhanced abilities on the fleet on the field. And imagining a Krogan just tackling like a human.
That would result in injuries every play. Like, what the hell? What kind of, actually, now that I think about it, maybe they have like some kind of futuristic football pads that activate mass effect fields to compensate for differences in weight of the players.
I don't know.
That would be kind of cool if they could like compensate for weight differentials in all of the players to kind of like level the playing field. However, that would really disincentivize working out.
Well, you still have to have stamina no matter what. Your cardio's got to be up there.
I can imagine, though, there would be a lot of protesters who'd be like, why the hell are we letting Krogan play in a sport with all humans? God, that's a little bit too close to home. Like a little bit, like a little bit apropos. They were way ahead of the curve in Cerberus Daily News writers in 2010. But I can imagine that a lot of people would be like, this isn't fair. The Krogan need their own league.
Well, I mean, unless it's multiple Krogans on each side of the team. And in that case, you know, it's a little bit of a more even playing field. Or maybe you can only have one Krogan on field at a time.
By the way,
that's a rule.
For anyone that like listens to that and goes, does he know what he just said? Yes, I know what I just said. A league of their own reference is what I was intending with the Krogan comment, because that is the way that bigoted protesters would be.
I can't believe I missed that one. Nice job. I love that movie.
It's a great movie. But okay, so I also want to back up and just note, like, as kind of like a fourth wall breaking thing, this text that was literally in Cerberus Daily News says verbatim Super Bowl. I was pretty sure that Super Bowl was a trademarked phrase, because in my journalism days, we were never allowed to say on the air or print Super Bowl even in the news article or the news when talking about it, when we're let's say, for example, there was a recall on chicken fingers, right? We could not get cute in the script writing and say, well, think twice before you head to the grocery store and stock up for the Super Bowl. We could not get cute like that. You can't say that. We would always be advised, just say, before stocking up for the big game. The big game. Mm-hmm. Because only Fox or CBS, only one of the networks had permission to say that. And I'm pretty sure, yeah, the NFL has also a trademark on game day, I guess. That's what Retrobot says in the comment. Anyway, I just want to back up and be like, Cerberus Daily News, apparently in 2010, they were allowed to say Super Bowl. So maybe that's before the NFL had trademarked it, or maybe they just weren't as litigious back then.
That one I have no answer for, but it's also not the NFL Super Bowl. And it is spaced out as two words, and I believe that it is one word. Right?
I don't know. Is it one word or is it two? Superb owl. Hold on. Let's see. It is two. It is two. So, interesting. Anyway, that's just my interesting note there. Besides that, and like the three people who care, the advertisements are still a big hit.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's why most of us end up watching the Super Bowl, is even if the game is lame, you know the commercials are going to be awesome. And apparently they still are.
Yeah, apparently they are. Yeah, especially Binary Helix is not my future. Thanks. Anyway, that's like kind of the most indirect entrance into this arc that I could possibly imagine. Because right there at the end, it says the greatest tease was for that movie, a soon-to-be summer blockbuster, Nakia Corridor. So what do we hear more about Nakia Corridor?
This is where the story truly starts to get interesting. So we've got a couple weeks later, star of Nakia Corridor struck by lightning while filming on location.
Shocking details at 11.
Filming of the space epic Nakia Corridor took a turn for the worse today as lightning struck the leading man, Nathan Gold, star of the 5.1 billion credit so far Enterprise, was strapped to the surface of a spaceship in the upper atmosphere of a gas giant when lightning hit the hull. Wow.
Guess you can say his performance was electric.
Oh my gosh. We're going to have so many puns tonight, guys. Strap in. Now, insulated against most of the effect, the Golden One had his suit's electronics suite fried and had to signal for assistance to get oxygen. Director Morgan Bierster said that he hopes the footage will stay in the final cut of the film. Quote, "You can't make up stuff like this," says Bierster. "It's going to be a once-in-a-lifetime sensation."
Have I heard that one before? But we don't need to get into that story. So when you said you can't make stuff like this up, I really thought that, like, given the circumstances that he got hit by lightning, but his suit's electronic suite was fried, and he was out of oxygen, apparently. He couldn't get oxygen. I thought that the director was going to say, "You can't make snuff like this up."
But then it also happens again very soon, you know, assistance for oxygen from somebody floating in space. Or has that already happened at this point in the timeline?
Yes, this has already happened. This was in 2183. That was just a few months after the Battle of the Citadel.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so this has already happened. You're referencing Shepard getting spaced, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so this actor, Nathan Gold, got hit by lightning, and that was, like, during the filming And I love that they say on location because they were in the upper atmosphere. Let's address that too. The fact that they are now filming movies literally in space. That is so cool. But also, I wonder technologically how that could work, because cameras rely on the entrance and the way that light enters the lens. In space with no atmosphere, depending on where the sun is, your shot is going to look weird as hell. And maybe not what you intend. Maybe there's like amazing post-processing effects and special effects they can do. But yeah, I can imagine the lightning also totally wrecked the exposure.
Yeah. But apparently he wants to keep it in the final cut. It'll look great.
I guess, yeah. Well, it does say in the upper atmosphere. So they weren't actually in orbit of a gas giant. I should correct myself. So they were in the atmosphere. So that would still work. Still really cool. This sounds like the most badass Mission Impossible movie that you could do. This
very much sounds like a Tom Cruise thing. You know, he would totally be the one to actually strap himself to the surface of a spaceship in order to get the best shot possible.
Yeah. Then afterward, go on a speaking tour about the movie, jump up and down on Arya's couch.
I would love to see that. I would love to see the Arya eye roll on that one. Oh my gosh.
I'm in love with Liara Cruz. I'm in love with Liara. Okay. That's such an old reference at this point. All right. So the next entry we get in terms of Nakia Corridor is that the principal photography on it has been ceased, like it stopped. So it says, principal photography on the space epic Nakia Corridor came to a halt today as the leading lady, Kate First walked off the set. Phone footage of her tantrum has hit the extranet. And Helmer? What does this mean, Helmer? The pilot? Is that what it means?
No, he's the director.
Oh, I've never heard it referred to as a Helmer.
He's helming the ship. He's directing it, I guess.
I guess. So, and it says, okay, so phone footage of her tantrum has hit the extranet, and Helmer Morgan Bierster says it isn't just another fake reality eyeball grabber. Quote, if we wanted free marketing, she'd have been nagging us naked, he quipped.
Yeah. Yeah, that's nice.
The fuck does that mean?
If you want to cause a media stir, do it naked.
Sounds like Morgan is kind of having a Freudian slip over there. I don't know. But scribe Eddie Carbetti, amazing name, by the way, Eddie Carbetti. Holy crap. Scribe Eddie Carbetti has reportedly been brought in to do rewrites to the script in order to soothe the savage starlet. I know whoever wrote this was very proud of themselves for writing that phrase, to soothe the savage starlet. That sounds like a phrase that a former print reporter would write in their headline and then be very proud of themselves. Carbetti got the gig after the 28th script draft gave former writer Stan Kurbis permanent nerve damage in the wrists. He'd better hurry. In 3 days, the lease is up on the Mass Effect relay they're using as a set.
So much to talk about in there. Okay. 28 script drafts. I assume that that's a lot. I assume that rewriting the entire movie probably 3 or 4 times, maybe. I don't know how that aspect of it works, but permanent nerve damage in your wrist. Buddy, get you a wrist little support system. Get something to protect yourself.
Yeah. But also, let's talk about the fact that apparently phones are still canon in Mass Effect, because it says phone footage of her tantrum, not Omnitool footage. I know that's probably just a copywriting mistake. Like, the editor, whoever edited this, probably looked that over, didn't realize that, like, you know, needs to be in universe a little bit more. But I'm also going to, for the sake of being a facetious little asshole, I'm going to say that phone footage is canon and phones do exist in Mass Effect in 2185.
I agree with you on that one because I feel like it's not the only reference to a phone. I will do more research on this, but I swear that there are other communication devices beyond just them holding their fingers up to their ears.
As cool as that looks. So apparently they went through so many rewrites just to placate Kate first. What a name. And this is after someone already got hit by lightning while in orbit filming.
Yeah. It's very, very strange. And I'm loving kind of the drama surrounding this movie so far. Can we also talk about the fact that they were able to lease a Mass Effect relay?
Yeah, what the fuck? Sorry, you gotta drop the F-bomb on that one because, like, do you understand that, like, if you lease a Mass Effect relay, the liability that comes with that?
I mean, does that completely shut it down? Are no ships allowed to use the relay while you have it leased out to you? Are you now stopping vital resources from getting to where they need to go just because you wanted to film there? I mean, there's so much. We don't know which relay, so we don't know what part of space they're in, or, you know, maybe it's one that's not used very often. But, and I mean, also on the other hand, that's going to be some really good footage.
Imagine being on the other side of that relay and needing to get where they are. Like,
oh,
that would be a pain. But also, I was going to say, like, the liability that comes with that, because imagine they make a mistake while filming some pyrotechnics or something and they somehow blow up the relay. I was going to say that. Then I realized that has not happened ever in the lore, at least to this cycle's knowledge. To this cycle's knowledge, that has not ever happened. So they shouldn't have reason to believe that it could happen, right?
Right. Randomly blowing up a relay or it getting damaged from something as simple as a minor explosion inside of it. Yeah. I bet you. I wonder if there are keepers on the relays. I don't know. Do we know the answer to that?
Probably inside. Keepers
only on the Citadel. Yeah.
It looks, honestly, it doesn't look like there's really any way to get inside a Mass Effect relay. I don't really know, though. If someone can correct me, I'd love that. But I wouldn't be surprised if there's, like, a bunch of keepers just inside every relay, because apparently they don't need to, like, eat or anything or sleep.
I feel like there is lore on that.
About how to get inside a Mass Effect relay?
Yeah, I feel like there is lore in about the relay. And what can go on in there. But I don't want to get too sidetracked on that because we actually do still have a lot to talk about with this movie.
Yes, we do. Okay, so where do we go next with the filming? Does it get past the savage starlet's soothing?
Yes. So after her tantrum, they were able to wrap the principal photography. Principal photography wrapped on Nakia Corridor, the troubled space epic from Morgan Bierster that had officially reached the benchmark of the most expensive simulstim ever. Champagne flowed freely on the set for 1 hour before technicians moved to strike the equipment and actors reported to the audio room for overdubbing work. Bierster predicts a long post-production process. Quote, "We've got over 3,000 effect shots to simulstim, but I am confident that they'll come out at the quality a picture like this deserves." End quote. Asked if more setbacks could sink the project now, he responded, quote, "Any delay now would have to be due to an act of God. And if he does that to me, I'll kick his holy ass."
By the way, he and his are capitalized. So, again, we already knew that Catholicism still existed in the Mass Effect universe in 2183. But again, we have canonized that humans, at least, do still believe in, like, a Abrahamic Judeo-Christian God.
Yeah. Singular big G God.
Yes, exactly. So, interesting there. Also, the first time I've ever seen simulstim as a word.
Yeah.
Is that supposed to be like simulcast, but simulstim?
So it does talk about this a little bit later, I believe, that you get, it's like smell-o-vision, you get a little bit of sensation while watching the movie. You get to feel some of the things that are going on, and I think it's enhanced sensory.
So they, the reviewers are not lying when they said that their hairs were standing on end watching Nathan Gold get electrocuted. Not sure I want that. But wow, this, okay. So you remember how we mentioned Avatar at the very beginning? At this point, it's the most expensive blockbuster to ever release. And they released the Cerberus Daily News, you know, 3 months after Avatar in 2009 released. Avatar was, of course, one of the most expensive movies that was ever produced by James Cameron. It was also one of the highest grossing, right? I don't know if it still holds that title. It's definitely still up there. But this is a direct joke about Avatar.
It absolutely is. Or at least that's the way that I feel about it. You know, it's the highest cost movie to produce, the highest money made in the movie. And then they're talking about adding all these special effects and things afterwards. And of course, Avatar is all about the sexy blue alien. Hello, Liara. Hello.
Didn't even think about that. Yeah. I was never quite attracted to Neytiri, as cool as her little, like, little ponytail thing that has like a nervous system end to it is. I don't want to think too much about that. But yeah, this is definitely an Avatar joke, because actually I remember in 2009 when Avatar came out, they were still showing 3D movies in the theater back then. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm. I did. Oh, I went and saw it in 3D in theaters within the first couple of weeks that it came out.
Yeah, so the simulstim thing here is like another, like, yeah, they're definitely referencing all the special effects, all the CGI, everything that went with Avatar back in the day. So they finished filming on the Kia Corridor, and it's the most expensive space epic, blah, blah, blah. Let's see how post-production goes. So we get an update that post-production on the mega, now it's called a mega simulstim, Nakia Corridor, may be the latest casualty of the Valum blast. Okay, before I keep going, I'm actually going to read a little bit from the Mass Effect wiki right here for everyone who's not familiar with the Valum blast, because we have not covered this on the Lorecast yet. So this goes back to the Turian civil war, I guess you'd call it. There was a Turian separatist group known as the as Ficinus. Anyway, they blew up a ship at near FTL speeds into the heart of the capital of the colony on Tatris. The capital's name is Valum. That's basically all you need to know for the background here. We'll definitely cover that part in a future episode, but just know that post-production on this film, on this simulstim, was the latest casualty of that terrorist attack. One of the sim's major scenes involves a lovelorn pilot committing suicide by flying a ship into a city at FTL speeds. Okay, I can see how this is problematic. Asked if this would remain in the final cut, director Morgan Bierster replied, "You'll have to wait and see," but added, "The project deals head-on with themes of death. The title's Nakia is actually a Greek word, the best translation for an Asari tradition asking for guidance from the dead. We're not about to ruin it all with some exploitative sequence. It would be tasteless to further traumatize those hurt by this tragedy." His actions back up these words. The Sims cast and crew have started a charity called Recovery Corridor. that's a little bit in poor taste, but recovery corridor to collect donations for the families of those devastated by the blast. Okay. My communications background is screaming at me to mention that recovery corridor, probably the worst use of language you could use, because when search and rescue efforts are halted because officials believe that there are no victims who are alive, they say that we have switched from search and rescue to a recovery effort, meaning they are trying to recover the bodies. So recovery corridor, probably a horrible use of words. For the author who wrote this Cerberus Daily News article, they definitely know that, and I appreciate the pun. But in-universe, horrible PR.
I like what the director said about it, though. Like, you'll have to wait and see. Okay, that sounds bad, but then he's explaining that the movie deals a lot with death, but we're also not going to be exploitative about it. You know, we're not going to push things to where it looks like we're mocking or making fun of or trying to, you know, sensationalize this real life tragedy. And so the fact that he's talking about it this way, and yeah, a charity with not the best name, but at least they started it. At least they're doing something.
Yep. At least they're doing something. I also feel like this is such a specific reference that there is a unintentionally replicated sequence of events that it mimics a contemporary terrorist attack in the Milky Way universe that just happened. That feels so hyper-specific that it has to have drawn on a real-world event or something that happened in a film after such a terrorist attack, when the filming was done before the attack, but then right before they put it out, you know, something happened like that in real life. I cannot, for the life of me, put my finger on such an instance, but I'm pretty sure it's happened.
Not a terrorist attack, but the movie Contagion that talked about a deadly virus killing out most of the population was filmed in early 2019, set for release in 2020.
Was it really that late? I thought that was a earlier movie than that, but wow.
There was a movie about a flu-like viral epidemic that hit worldwide. And it was right within that time frame. It might not have been Contagion then.
Oh, man. Talk about apropos. That's a lot better than the example I was thinking of, which was the dark fan theory that Kermit has caused 9/11. Have you heard that?
No.
Oh, well, go look it up. Listeners, if you're curious about it, go look it up. There's a funny fan theory that Kermit caused 9/11 because of a Muppets. Basically, the sequence in which a Muppets thing was filmed and how it correlates to 2001. But anyway, this film has run into, Nakia Corridor specifically, has run into so many, like, uncanny coincidences. You know what I mean? Let all of them just hitting and setting back the film's production. If I were the director, I'm just like, get this shit out. Like, just fucking finish it. Put the film out. I don't want it anymore. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of little weird things going on with this movie. And that's why it's so interesting. I want to know more. Like, when does this movie actually come out? Because we're already, the one that you read was posted in May and we started in February. So they teased it in February and they're just now getting to starting post-production in May.
Yeah, that's a rapid production, isn't it? I mean, like, holy cow, 3 months? I mean, I think we should probably give BioWare a little bit of credit here, because they probably were thinking in universe timeline, it makes more sense than 3 months to put together an entire movie. somehow they put together, somehow they put out a tease before they finished filming. I guess you could do that, but I would imagine that's not actually standard. Anyway, we have an entire second half of this episode to go through with how this unfolds in Nikia Corridor, and I promise you don't know how this is going to go. So let's go over to the mid-break, and we'll be right back.
This isn't just a game. It's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
We have beef, we have bacon, we have beer. The foods of my people.
Young men have funny ideas of what Asari are like. I blame the extranet and computer games.
Rex?
Shepherd.
Grunt?
Shepherd.
Rex? Grunt?
All right, here we are in the middle of the show where we read out your five-star reviews that you can leave on Apple Podcasts or Audible, a number of other places. But we don't have any from those other places this week. However, we got some comments on our most recent Lorecast episode up on Spotify. And here, I'll go ahead and read the first one from Osh. I think this is pronounced Oshkar, that says, "What if the power did not fail on Ilos and Vigil did not have to shut down the Prothean life pods? Would there have been enough Protheans alive to repopulate? Would they have built the Crucible while the Reapers were still in their slumber in dark space? Would they have guided humans the same way they did the Asari?" So many possibilities. I love this comment, Oshkar, and maybe we'll have to cover this in a future What If episode of the Lorecast.
I like that. What if the power didn't fail on Ilos? And so we're talking like after the Reapers had left for the cycle and all the Protheans were brought back online, how that would have changed things.
Yeah.
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 That would change everything.
If there were hundreds of Protheans, maybe thousands, by the time our cycle comes around. Because then if it's just one planet, it's hard to think that they would want to become so high profile that they would become like the Reapers would be like, oh shit, we missed something. So they probably wouldn't dominate the galaxy again. Anyway, I'm going to save my thoughts on that for the future episode where we cover it. But thank you, Oshkar, for that comment. And Genesis, I think we got a couple more if you want to read them.
Yeah, one from the Architect. "I would be interested in a what if Warlord or Okir survived and was successful in curing the Genophage or Krogan cloning." A million little grunts running around.
Oh, man. I feel like that would become real bad. In that instance, there might be a lot more people who sympathize with the Dalitras.
I would agree. Oh, I mean, curing the Genophage is one thing, but raising an army of grunts is different because Shepherd is the one to help mold and shapes Grunt's morality compass. Oh, that is a good what if. All right, I will save my thoughts.
Great what if. And there's one more from Devin Pierce who says, "What if the other Turian Spectre, Nihilus, did not die on Eden Prime? For both Shepherd does and doesn't touch the beacon possibilities. Also, for the audio clip, I just heard Worf, and that's as far as I got." That's referencing the voice line that we did last week. And speaking of which, Genesis, you have a pop quiz voice line for me. The title of the file that you've given me is Turian Love. Okay, I don't know where this is going.
It's not what you think.
Okay, I hope. Anyway, let's give it a listen.
"Glad to hear it. I was losing sleep over the prospect of people not loving the Turians."
Okay, so that's Rex for sure. That's Rex. That's got to be an elevator conversation in Mass Effect 1.
Ah, oh, you are too good at this one.
Was I right? Oh, man, nice. I wasn't actually totally sure. But here, I'll play it again. I'll tell you why I said that.
Glad to hear it. I was losing sleep over the prospect of people not loving the Turians.
So you hear that, like, little hum in the background? Like the hum. I knew it was either in the vehicle bay of the Normandy or in an elevator, but because there was such a long pause and no one else was talking, I was like, that's got to be an elevator ride.
Oh, dang. Okay, I normally cut the pauses. I will do better on editing the little files I send you.
Yeah, no. Well, no, you don't need to edit them at all. In fact, I think it's best when they're not edited. I haven't been editing mine anyway. But I'm glad that I got that one. I don't think we have any new patrons to shout out, or do we? Let me just make double sure on that one. We do not have any new patrons to shout out, but if you'd like to support the show, you can, and if you're able and willing, we do have a Patreon you can go to. Short of that, honestly, the best way that you can support our show is telling your friends about it. If you got friends that are into Mass Effect and they're on the road commuting to work or whatever, just be like, hey, I found a podcast I think you might like. Give it a listen. If you hate their guts, send them a very nasty email in which you accuse In7 Legend of sounding like a Volus. I'll never forget that one. But anyway, thank you to everyone who does support us on the Patreon. Seriously, you guys are lifesavers and you allow us to keep doing this. Especially our Tier 5 patrons, including Butts. Unfortunate Benefactor, William, Superfly 440, Retrobot, Lieutenant Tosino, Kira C, and Ed Boy. Thank you all so much for your continued support. And with that, let's get back with the rest of the show.
After time adrift among open stars, along tides of light and through shoals of dust, I will return to where I began.
Solarian reproduction different, very little sex drive. If intended to try human, would try you.
Ow, my pancreas.
All right, here we are. We're back. And it is red carpet time, because Nikia Korridor is premiering in none other than the Big Apple. It was a star-studded night in New York City as the long-awaited space epic Nikia Korridor held its premiere at the Royal Simul Cinema 189 in the East Village. Okay, this is kind of funny, like, because for anyone who has, like, some kind of knowledge about New York City, of course this would be in the East Village. But, all right, it says light and shadow pictures spared no expense as the red carpet took the haute couture along. I hope I said that right. I've never known how to say that, actually. I've always read that.
Haute couture?
Yeah, there we go. Haute couture along a bridge of carbon nanotubes over an eerie pit of holographic ghosts. What the hell is this movie about?
So it's interesting because the word Nikea is actually the root form of the word necromancy. Like, that's how far back it goes.
Whoa, I didn't know this. Did you, like, do some, like, Wikipedia rabbit holing to get that?
I did.
Yeah, I figured. That sounded like the production of 12:30 a.m. Wikipedia rabbit hole. So, all right. So they've got a bridge of carbon nanotubes, which I can only imagine what that looks like, over an eerie pit of holographic ghosts. What is this movie about? Anyway, A-listers were everywhere. Enemy is everywhere. A-listers were everywhere, from Ace Skidmore to Simon Eldfell. Hey, Eldfell, as in Eldfell Ashland Energy. Mm-hmm. Love that. Even Lisa Ford stopped by. Okay, Ford, as in Ford versus Huerta, that kind of that arc with the North American political arc. Anyway, we'll cover that in a different series of episodes. The Speaker's District was home to 11 of the sound stages used in the film. So that's why Ford is there. That's why Lisa Ford's there. Leading lady Kate First was on hand with her life partner. It's funny because it's such a product of 2010. and even before, to refer to someone as a life partner. Leading lady Kate First was on hand with her life partner, Elena Renezia. Lightning Rod leading man Nathan Gold made only a video appearance from his hospital bed. No, I'm kidding. Doesn't say that. Made only a video appearance as he was on Thessia for the simultaneous Usaru premiere. Director Morgan Bierster commented, "We're excited and exhausted. The Sims been getting fabulous buzz in the pirate community." Excuse me? Fabulous buzz in the pirate community, and it's great to be here and give the glitterati their turn. We've got 4 hours to go, and then we'll know if I should cut my wrists or not. Holy shit. Jesus.
I think what he means by the pirate community is people who have illegally downloaded his movie first and
yes,
watched it.
Yes, not like, arg.
No Buccaneers going on here. But no, this is amazing. This is obviously a huge red carpet. And we've seen a red carpets in the Citadel DLC, so we know that the paparazzi still love taking their pictures. And that's what this is all about, continuing the buzz and going to go see the movie. But that last line,
oh, that's also some 2010 edgy humor right there. That's what that is. That's all right, guys, I'm not telling you to go see my movie, but if you don't go see it, then, I'm taking the express lane downstairs from the 25th floor, if you catch my drift, because the floor
will be one of those
will.
Ghosts. One of the holographic ghosts is going to have my face on it next time.
okay.
So, yeah, the life partner thing. Yep. Domestic partnership, right along those lines. Yeah.
Yeah. Special friend.
Yes. They were roommates.
They were roommates. There's another old ass reference for you. Okay. So how does opening night go, Genesis?
Ah, the wait is finally over. Nakia Corridor opened at midnight last night to throngs of camped out fans. The 5.3 billion credit juggernaut broke first day release records, sucking up 2.97 billion credits in 20 Citadel Standard hours. At its core, The Sims about falling in love, losing that love, and trying to get it back, says director Morgan Bierster. It just takes place in one of the most dangerous parts of space, where ancient Asari once believed the souls of the dead went.
Okay, so now we're getting a few more details about what this movie is actually about. So it sounds very edgy, very angsty, like, you know, basically it's like Romeo and Juliet meets Mission Impossible. That's what it sounds like.
It also sounds a little Nathan Drake-y, you know, falling in love with Elena, then they get divorced and then they get back together. Uncharted.
Yes.
Games.
Yes. Uncharted worlds.
Yes. The Turian reviewers have called the FTL impact scene. So going back to the Vallum, they called it haunting in light of the Vallum blast. One saying, being in the body of the pilot is gut-wrenching. The cutaway leaves everything to the imagination and is just the right move.
Wow, that's dark. That's not just dark. That's pitch black. That's... So basically, there's a lovelorn pilot who decides that the only way to ease the pain is to commit suicide by ramming the ship at FTL speeds into a city, which, by the way, depending on the weight of the ship and what the mass effect field was perhaps altering that mass to be, that would be like an order of magnitude larger than a nuclear explosion.
Yeah. We definitely, I mean, slamming an asteroid at FTL speeds, we know causes catastrophic damage. Intentionally sending your ship would cause the same issues.
Definitely. So this is kind of a big asshole move, actually, from the pilot, because this isn't just committing suicide. This is like committing mass murder. This is what this is.
This is, it's kamikaze.
Right. But like, I don't know. Anyway, he's not, obviously the person's not thinking logically, but for this to come out so soon after the Vallum blast, the Turians are taking this surprisingly graciously.
Yeah. This is also just one Turian giving one quote, and we don't even know if this is the Turian who was working on the film and so therefore is giving it the best review possible.
That's true. That's true. It says human reviews. How did those go?
Human reviews were mixed. One saying, it harbors the vain hope that the viewer will turn his brain off while the movie at the same time bends over backwards to stimulate it. The result is adrenaline charged, but emotionally exhausting.
I wish a movie would bend over backward to stimulate me. Anyway, how's married life going? Now, this is like a brutal review that it harbors the vain hope that the viewer will turn his brain off. Okay. But also, it basically, this review is saying that this is like if Michael Bay tried to make a deep movie. That's what this review is saying.
Exactly that. It's very much that. Lots of explosions going everywhere. Adrenaline charged. We've got Megan Fox being sexy and that's all about it. But also adding the emotional exhaustion, the gut-wrenching scenes with the pilot falling in love and losing it. There's a lot going on in this movie, and I think I totally would like to see it. I could also see how this is very much Avatar. It is very adrenaline charged. They go through a lot to get there. It is emotionally a good story, trying to figure out if you should support the alien race or stick with the humans, and everything that's going on in that movie, this is them poking at it.
That scene with the FTL impact scene, and apparently it cuts to black right after showing the pilot's point of view. What do you think the chances are that it cut to black while they were playing What I've Done by Linkin Park? Because this is 2009. So I'm also thinking this has got to be like a stereotypical 2009, 2010 movie reference about how so many movies ended back then. I'm thinking obviously about Transformers, you know, and how the credit scenes, the thing that was in vogue was to like leave on a cliffhanger and then like the music kicks in and like that was badass, right? I feel like this has got to be commentary about that.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I could totally see that. Like, I feel like it probably would damage the emotionality of watching the pilot do that. But I could also just see it being more, if it was played more into the action version of it, what I've done fits.
Yeah. So, all right. So we get some more reviews about Nikia Korridor. Excuse me. My dinner is coming back up. The reviews continue to pour in for Nikia Korridor, some offended, but most overawed. Quote, a simulstim that can impress both human and Asari audiences is hard enough, says columnist Gera Sator of SimsWithGuns.com. Okay, so Sims with Guns is not referring to, like, The Sims, the video game. That's referring to simulstims, I think, says SimsWithGuns.com. But she says, Beerster has the insane dream of going after the whole galaxy. From the reaction I saw among Solarian audiences, he might just get it. Okay, I want to stop right there for a second. Because we know that Solarian brains work at light speed, and their life spans are also significantly shorter, that would be a feat to get a Solarian audience to sit through the length of a movie that an Asari audience would also sit through.
thinking of it that way, yeah. And to be able to keep a Solarian occupied for them to watch the whole movie, you know, having them sit there and just watch, it means that they kept things fast enough paced, but also intriguing enough. And, you know, there's got to be high level of thought and logic in order to keep them, you know, wanting to stay the whole time. But you've got to bring in the emotionality for the Asari's to want to sit through it. And then there's also got to be big enough guns for the Krogans and enough fighting and for the Turians. And then humans, well, shit, we'll watch anything.
That's fair. Yeah, I think human, you're definitely going to find a human audience for anything. Okay, so the reviews continue. Lucy Tannenbaum of sharpstickintheeye.com says, quote, "The adventures of the protagonists are so jaw-droppingly extreme that they would be called unbelievable in a Hollow, except that you know that this is a sim, and some crazy mother expletive actually had to do it. Before the shock wears off, you're willing to believe any hoo-ha the script throws at you." Wow. Tell us what you really think, Lucy.
We would also like to go on record that neither of those websites are real. Yes, I checked.
Yeah. All right. So Lucy seems to think that this is way too ostentatious of a movie, that the displays of action are apparently too extreme to be believable, because if you saw it in a real video of real people, you would say it's nuts. But then she comments apparently on the stunts that were actually filmed for this simulstim. And she says, and then you got to realize basically that some crazy mother expletive actually had to do it. Because so that gives us some valuable lore knowledge into how simulstims are created. So apparently you cannot just film something and have a stunt person do it like with some kind of practical effect so it looks real but isn't. Like, a simulstim has to engage the senses, so the actor actually has to do it. Even if it's a stunt double actor, like, someone has to physically really do it. I'm guessing they're wearing some kind of like measurements or you know, tools or some kind of devices on them.
A brain dance wreath?
Maybe a brain dance wreath, yes.
This is exactly what this sounds like to me. It very much sounds like a pulling lore from Cyberpunk, because a brain dance is where you are recording every sensation while you are doing an action. It's sight, smells, the heat waves being from inside of the room. Everything that's going on is tracked, recorded, and can be replicated by whoever is watching the sim afterwards, or the brain dance. And so I think that that's kind of what this is also alluding to, is that all of these people, all of these actors are recording everything that is going on. The words that they're saying, the sensations that they're feeling, the adrenaline rush, being shocked in outer space. And then that is what is going into the movie. And then that is what the watcher is going to be able to experience also, but probably at a little bit lesser of a sensation than what the original person felt.
That would be pretty cool to be able to experience movies that way. But I'll say, be pretty cool to experience some movies that way. Like, there are definitely some movies I will never see as a simulstim. One of them that comes to mind is Human. I think you can fill in the blank for that other word there.
Oh, yeah. No, definitely don't want to experience that one. And I'm good on zombie movies. I don't need that much adrenaline.
Something tastes like shit. So anyway, so that one, that, okay, so that technology has the capability to be amazing and awful. But how does it do after its initial opening day?
All right. Box office receipts are in, and audiences went to hell and back for the sexy movie with the unsexy name. Nikia Corridor demolished four-day records, scooping up a tidy 302 million extra credits from its Earth audiences in North America, who had a three-day weekend due to a political holiday. Oh, it came out on the 4th of July. I just realized that.
Oh, it did. Yes, because the... Yeah, so the first day that it came out was actually... let's see.
July 1st.
Yes, but its advance premiere was June 25th, apparently. And then it came out July 1st. And so that was apparently on the July 4th weekend.
Yep. All right. There we go. Nakia broke three records for single-day takes and capped the Thursday through Monday streak off at a whopping 13.3 billion credits. So it cost $5 to create, and they made 13.3. Damn.
Pretty good turnover.
Mm-hmm. Asked if there was any way to increase the hit's profits, director Morgan Bierster said, "I guess we could build more theaters."
Man, this guy's got some real zingers.
Right? Meanwhile, back among mortals, the comedy anthology Gagged scooped up 67 million credits. So yeah, everybody went to go see this movie and did not go get gagged. I mean, go see Gagged.
I would love to know what Gagged is about.
It's a comedy anthology, apparently.
Apparently so. Okay, so Morgan Bierster says, you know, any way that you could have increased your profits even more, I guess we could build more theaters. That's like the general hang 'em high Patton response to that question. This guy is like the general Patton of movie directors.
Yeah, I like it. It's a good line, though.
It is.
Now, going back to Gagged, producer Scott Hasten said, "Yeah, we brought in a pretty big audience ourselves during Nakia's intermission."
Okay, so this simulstim was so long it had an intermission?
Yeah. So that's like, what? It's got to be a 3 to 4 hour movie?
How long did it actually say? I don't think it said yet how long it was.
It doesn't.
So, but it did say it was a space epic. So I guess we are led to believe that it's long in that regard. Okay, so then we get some data from the extranet that says there were no surprises on the download charts this weekend. Nakia Corridor is on its way to becoming the highest grossing sim ever. The long-awaited actioner charmed another 9.1 billion audiences. Oh, I'm sorry, charmed another 9.1 billion out of audiences galaxy-wide, passing the Asari classic Confederates in adjusted credits. Confederates, if I remember, that could be a reference to the political structure of the Asari republics.
That one, I'm not sure. All that I found on it was that it was previously the highest grossing sim.
Okay, I think it's a reference. It must be some kind of political thriller, that kind of movie. Quote, "It's absolutely unreal to be at the center of something this big," says director Morgan Bierster. "I can only say thank you to the fans for giving me my own Hollywood ending." Wait, is he going to kill himself? Because he was joking about it before, and now he's talking about his own Hollywood ending. He says, "I thought I was going to have to sell shoes for a living when this was done." Okay, good. He's not talking about that. In the giant's shadow, low-budget hollow horror The Phage 2 scooped up 653 million credits by squeezing scares out of a sentient Solarian bio-warfare project that dissolves people outright. That sounds like a reference to the Greys, doesn't it? Because the Solarians look like the Greys, the gray aliens. You know, the big eyes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I see that with the big eyes, and because I was like, the head shape's very, very different. But the phage too, instead of the genophage, it's halting reproduction. Now they're just dissolving people outright. Oh my god.
The phage too. Sterilize harder. Jeez, dude. Oh my god. There's some Krogan fans who are going to be pissed off at that lore, but it's lore. It's there. So that is the completion of the Nakia Corridor arc, where I feel like we got like a weird amount of lore for basically nothing that really changes anything else in the lore of the Mass Effect universe. It's just something fun.
Yeah, this is totally fluffy and, you know, it's following the movie, but we get, you know, actual numbers and audiences and terminology that we haven't seen before, new names to work with. We talked about two of the celebrities that went to the premiere, you know, the Simon Eldfield, Lisa Ford. Like, these are people that we can learn more lore about through other things, and they just show up here at a random premiere to a movie. And so that's one of my favorite things about how there's so much lore in Mass Effect, and it all intertwines and interweaves, and that reading one little article can open up so much more.
Yeah, and you know, it did such a great job in world building. And that's, I think, the greatest strength of these Cerberus Daily News stories, that they may not come into play anywhere in the games at all, really, but they do so much for broadening our understanding of and our appreciation of the world or worlds of the Mass Effect universe. Because now we understand so much more about how the social dynamics are at play, how entertainment and the entertainment industry is very similar to what we know now, and also quite different from what we know now. So I like the fact that it was very relatable, but at the same time, you can see how technology and social trends have shaped the entertainment industry, even for a human-made film.
Oh, that, and I love that there are still little things that remind us of, you know, the time that it was written. And
yeah, it is a bit of a time capsule. Yeah, that's for sure. So if anyone is, you know, listening to this, and in 2009, you were like too young to really understand some of the pop culture events that were going on, we got you. This is hopefully a good lesson in terms of how the Mass Effect writers were making social commentary way back then that by today's standards could very well be labeled woke.
Yeah. Sorry, my brain also triggered on, we've got 4 hours to go, and then I don't know if I should cut my wrist or not. I'm wondering if that's the length of the movie, because we've got 4 hours and then I'll know what the fan reaction is.
You're right. You're right. It's 4 hours long. It's a 4-hour movie. So it's like Lord of the Rings, but a space epic. Space epic romance thriller action movie.
Everything all mashed into one. Let's go.
All right. Yeah, I guess it's got everything. Now I need to know how long the Elcor rendition is.
Oh. Would an Elcor stand outside of the ship in low atmosphere just to get a shot?
Would it have to wear grav boots? That would look ridiculous.
Yeah. How do they wear space helmets? Like, how does that even work? Do Elcor wear pants, and how would it?
Does it go this way or like this way? I don't know. Anyway, that'd be pretty funny. I'm hoping everybody enjoyed this episode. We wanted to pick something that was a little bit more lighthearted, a little bit more fun for the episode that comes out right before Christmas. Now, we still got a couple more weeks before the end of the year, and next week we are putting out, we had a Robots Radio Network holiday special where, Genesis, you were a little bit busy, but I was able to show up and chat with other hosts from around the Robots Radio Network, and we all discussed one thing that we think the communities of each of our shows should try. because we greatly enjoyed it, trying it over the past year. So that'll be out next week. And then after that, we get to talk to our patrons one final time in 2025.
Oh, can't believe it's already at the end of the year.
Which means it's almost been 1 year that you have been co-hosting the show with me.
That's also crazy. Time, it flies, yet it also feels like I've kind of been here forever. So, you know, that works too.
Yeah, right. Feels like just yesterday my son was born, but he's like almost 9 months old now, which is nuts. So anyway, here's to the new and here's to the old. One is silver and one is gold. Have a Merry Christmas, everybody, and a Happy New Year, and go see a blockbuster movie. Until next time, Spectres, we should go. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Mass Effect Lorecast. Reach out to us on Blue Sky, Twitter, Discord, Patreon, or email us at massEffectLorecast@gmail.com.
Join us next week for more lore. Same space, same time. Or check out our live streams at twitch.tv/massEffectLorecast.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.